Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
My daughter was there. Every day that passes is a danger to their lives. I was there. My daughter was there. Do not abandon the hostages. We must act now. A deal is required today. Bring them home now!
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is facing growing calls for another Gaza ceasefire after Israeli troops mistakenly shot dead three Israeli soldiers who were shirtless and Israeli hostages who were shirtless and waving a white flag. This comes as Israel continues to target hospitals, refugee camps, and journalists in Gaza. On Friday, Samer Abu Dhaka, a reporter from Al Jazeera, bled to death after being injured in an Israeli drone strike on a UN school in Khan Yunis. Israeli forces prevented ambulances and rescue workers from reaching him for 5 hours as he bled to death.
This is a new crime against Palestinian journalists that adds up to the crimes of the Israeli occupation. The killing of the colleague Samir and preventing the ambulances from reaching him is a new crime carried out by the occupation forces by targeting this colleague, the cameraman who was on duty.
Al Jazeera is filing a complaint with the International Criminal Court calling the targeting of journalists a war crime. We'll speak with Mahran Bashira of Al Jazeera. Then, as some 200 countries at COP28 agree to phase down fossil fuels, nations are facing pressure to block new oil and gas projects. Climate groups in the UK filed a lawsuit to block a massive new oil field in the North Sea, saying it violates obligations to target net zero carbon emissions. We'll go to London to speak with The Guardian's senior climate reporter, Nina Lakhani. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's continuing its deadly attacks across the Gaza Strip with mass casualties reported in densely populated areas, including the Jabalia and Nusayrat refugee camps. As the death toll in Gaza nears 19,000, a new Human Rights Watch report accuses Israel of using starvation as a weapon of war, which is a war crime. Human Rights Watch says, quote, Israeli forces are deliberately blocking the delivery of water, food and fuel while willfully impeding humanitarian assistance, apparently raising agricultural areas and depriving the civilian population of objects indispensable to their survival. The damning HRW report comes as another road crossing into Gaza was open this weekend. But the Karam Abu Salem or Karam Shalom crossing had only allowed 24 trucks carrying medical supplies and fuel to enter as of earlier today. The trucks are required to go through an Israeli checkpoint, effectively delaying aid that used to pass much more freely through the Rafah crossing when 500 trucks a day were going through. Pope Francis has condemned Israeli, what he calls terrorism, after an Israeli soldier shot and killed two Christian women, an elderly woman and her adult daughter who tried to save her at a Catholic church in Gaza City Sunday. Displaced Christian families have been sheltering at the Holy Family Latin Parish in Gaza City, which came under intense Israeli bombardment over the weekend. Israel also continues to target hospitals across Gaza. On Sunday, an Israeli tank shelled the maternity building at the Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunis, killing a 13-year-old girl and injuring several others. In Gaza City, there are reports of continuous gunfire at Al-Shifa Hospital. A team from the World Health Organization that was able to deliver limited relief supplies to Al-Shifa Saturday described the hospital's emergency ward as a bloodbath.
This largest referral hospital here in Gaza has become a trauma stabilization point. They can only provide the most basic care for people with very serious injuries and very serious illnesses. There are women delivering in these common spaces that are just absolutely packed to the brim. Most patients are on the floor. A few are in beds and stretchers behind me. The emergency department is just covered in blood, and there are very few staff. Children are being treated on the floor for serious injuries, for burns, for open wounds.
The Palestinian Health Ministry has called for an urgent investigation into reports that Israeli forces bulldozed tents housing displaced Palestinians in the courtyard of the Kamat Adwan Hospital, crushing people to death inside their makeshift shelters. This comes just days after Israeli troops rounded up men and boys at the hospital, including medical staff. Among those detained was hospital director Dr. Ahmed Al-Khalut.
They raided the building. They took all the employees for investigation. Also, the injured people were being investigated. There were six bodies and a 60-year-old patient who died. They took these bodies. I don't know what they did with them. According to the employees, they burnt the bodies.
Al Jazeera is filing a complaint with the International Criminal Court over the killing of photojournalist Samer Abu Dhaka, who bled to death over the course of more than 5 hours Friday after he was injured in an Israeli drone strike. He was hit while covering the aftermath of Israeli strikes on a UN school sheltering displaced people in Khan Yunis. Israeli forces reportedly prevented rescue workers from reaching Abu Dhaka, at one point firing on an ambulance. The same attack injured Al Jazeera's Gaza bureau chief, Wael Dadu. They were working together. Al Dadu, in October, lost 12 members of his family, including his wife, his daughter, his son, and his grandchild, in an Israeli airstrike. Elsewhere, Palestinian journalist Mohammed Baloucha was shot in the thigh Saturday in an apparent attack by an Israeli sniper. He was wearing a helmet and press badge when he was fired on. Baloucha's previous reporting about the deaths of premature infants in the neonatal intensive care unit of Gaza-besieged Al Nasser Children's Hospital drew international attention. In occupied East Jerusalem, photojournalist Mustafa Al-Kharouf, who works for the Turkish Anadolu outlet, was hospitalized Friday after he was severely beaten by Israeli border police. Al-Kharouf had been taking photographs outside the Al-Aqsa Mosque when officers pointed their weapons at him, then threw him to the ground and began beating and kicking him. The attack was caught live on CNN. We'll have more on Israel's attacks on journalists later in the broadcast. Israel's military says it's investigating why its soldiers shot and killed three Israeli hostages on Friday as they approached troops in Gaza City begging for help. An Israeli military official said Sunday the three men were shirtless, with one of them waving a white flag. When troops opened fire on the men, in violation of Israeli military rules of engagement, makeshift signs written in Hebrew reading SOS and help three hostages were hung on a building near the spot where the three men were shot dead. News of the killing sparked mass protests in Tel Aviv over the weekend. On Saturday, released captives demanded the Israeli government act decisively to free the more than 100 remaining hostages held in Gaza. This is former hostage Danielle Aloni.
My daughter was there. Every day that passes is a danger to their lives. I was there. My daughter was there. Do not abandon the hostages. We must act now. A deal is required today. Bring them home now!
This comes amidst reports the head of the Israeli spy agency Mossad met with the Qatari prime minister in Oslo over the weekend to discuss the possibility of relaunching talks to release the remaining hostages. U.S. Secretary of Defense is now in Tel Aviv, Lloyd Austin. In a significant shift, British Foreign Secretary David Cameron and German Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock called for a sustainable ceasefire in a joint article in the Sunday Times. The pair said efforts should be focused on a two-state solution after the assault comes to an end. The UK and Germany had previously declined to call for a ceasefire and abstained from voting last week on the UN General Assembly's ceasefire resolution. Also on Sunday, the French Foreign Minister, Catherine Colonna, called for an immediate and durable truce while meeting with her Israeli counterpart, Eli Cohen, in Tel Aviv, saying, quote, too many civilians are being killed in Gaza. This comes as Defense Secretary Austin arrived in Israel earlier today, where he's expected to focus talks on transitioning to a lower intensity war. Austin traveled to Israel from Kuwait, where he paid his respects after the death of Sheikh Nawaf Ahmad al-Sabah, the Emir of Kuwait, who was buried Sunday. Meanwhile, the UN Security Council's voting today on a new resolution calling for a, quote, urgent and sustainable cessation of hostilities to allow safe and unhindered humanitarian access in the Gaza Strip. In the United States, Rudy Giuliani, Donald Trump's former lawyer, has been ordered to pay $148 million in damages to two former Georgia election workers he defamed after the 2020 election. Giuliani falsely accused Ruby Freeman and her daughter Shay Moss of ballot tampering, leading to harassment and threats against the two women by Trump supporters. This is Shay Moss speaking after the verdict on Friday.
The flame that Giuliani lit with those lies and passed to so many others to keep that flame blazing changed every aspect of our lives. Our homes, our family, our work, our sense of safety, our mental health, and we're still working to rebuild.
It's not clear whether Giuliani will be able to pull together the money and how much the two women will end up receiving. Giuliani has vowed to appeal. Donald Trump has intensified his hate speech and attacks on immigrants ahead of Iowa's Republican presidential primary next month. Trump spoke at a rally in New Hampshire Saturday.
They're poisoning the blood of our country. That's what they've done. They poison mental institutions and prisons all over the world, not just in South America, not just the three or four countries that we think about, but all over the world. They're coming into our country from Africa, from Asia.
If reelected president, Trump has vowed to soar mass deportations and enact many of his previous anti-immigrant policies. The White House condemned Trump's remarks as fascist and said he was, quote, parroting Adolf Hitler. But President Biden has also been widely criticized for perpetuating border and immigration restrictions similar to Trump's, including asylum bans, detention, and large-scale deportations. In Ohio, prosecutors have criminally charged a woman for having a miscarriage at home, sparking widespread outrage. Brittany Watts, a black woman, was told by her doctor that her 21-week pregnancy was non-viable. Although abortion is legal in Ohio until 22 weeks, Watts was not able to have her labor induced over hospital concerns about potential legal issues. She had a miscarriage at home in her bathroom. After the miscarriage, Watts became ill and was treated in the hospital, where a nurse called the police after Watts told her she had to dispose of the contents of her miscarriage. Brittany Watts, who was still sick and grieving the loss of her pregnancy, was questioned by a police officer in her hospital room. 2 weeks later, Ohio authorities charged Watts with felony abuse of a corpse, which carries a possible sentence of a year in prison. Serbian President Aleksandar Vučić has declared victory after his right-wing populist party appeared to be on course for an absolute majority in Serbia's parliament after a snap election Sunday. Opposition candidates accused Vučić's ruling party of vote rigging and voter intimidation and said it would lodge official complaints with the state election commission. In Argentina, Human rights advocates warn of a looming crackdown by the government of the far-right, newly elected President Javier Milei to suppress anticipated protests in response to Milei's economic reforms and the drastic devaluation of the Argentine currency. The plan targets the blockade of roads and major highways, while Milei's security minister said last week protesters would be surveilled with video, digital or manual means. The move was condemned by leaders across Latin America. This is Mexican President AMLO, Andrés Manuel López Obrador.
No caigan en ninguna provocación.
Don't fall into any provocation. Nonviolence and civil peaceful resistance are politically effective. Don't expose yourself to danger. Avoid harassment. But that does not mean not protesting.
And Chilean voters have rejected a new draft of the Constitution proposed by conservative lawmakers to replace the Pinochet dictatorship-era charter. Sunday's vote came over a year since Chileans also rejected a separate draft put together by progressives that would have expanded indigenous rights, abortion access, and addressed the climate crisis. The conservative proposal could have further restricted reproductive rights. Chilean President Gabriel Boric said Sunday his government will not attempt to change the Constitution for a third time.
The constitutional referendum was supposed to bring hope, but it generated frustration and even wariness in a big part of the population. We cannot ignore this. Politics is so weak, and it is essential that these results have an immediate effect. Without any more delays nor excuses, we'll focus everyone's work to create deals and solutions Chile needs for education, security, economic, and social issues.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. When we come back, we'll speak to Marwan Bishara, senior political analyst at Al Jazeera. We'll talk about the visit of U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin. We'll talk about what they call the day after, and also the killing of his colleague, Samer Abu-Dhaka. This is Democracy Now!, back in a minute. Performed by Shirley Hayden and Carla Bley, the jazz pianist and composer who passed away in October. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel is intensifying its attacks across Gaza as pressure grows on Israel to support another ceasefire. The Israeli newspaper Haaretz reports the head of the Mossad, Israel's intelligence service, has met with the prime minister of Qatar and CIA chief William Burns in Poland. Talks between the Mossad and Qatar also took place this weekend in Norway. Meanwhile, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has arrived in Tel Aviv for talks. This comes as Israel continues to carry out attacks across Gaza, targeting hospitals, schools and refugee camps. Authorities in Gaza say an Israeli attack on the Jabalia refugee camp killed 110 people on Saturday. Israel has also raided the Kamal Adwan Hospital, where doctors say Israeli bulldozers crushed Palestinians to death, including wounded patients who were living in tents in the hospital's courtyard. Israel's also attacked Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City and the Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunis. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is facing growing calls to secure the release of the remaining Israeli hostages in Gaza after Israeli forces mistakenly shot dead three Israeli hostages who managed to escape captivity in northern Gaza. The three men, who were all shirtless, were shot as they cried for help in Hebrew while holding up a white flag. Meanwhile, Israel continues to attack Palestinian journalists. On Friday, Al Jazeera journalist Samer Abu-Dhaka was killed after an Israeli drone struck a UN school in Khan Yunis, where displaced Palestinians were being sheltered. In a statement, Al Jazeera said, quote, following Samer's injury, he was left to bleed to death for over 5 hours as Israeli forces prevented ambulances and rescue workers from reaching him, denying the much-needed emergency treatment, unquote. This is Ibrahim Khanan, a reporter for Aghad in Gaza.
This is a horrific crime, a direct target. The first missile hit Samer, and he tried to crawl for 200 meters, but the Israeli warplanes hit him again and directly, so he became a martyr, and his body was cut into pieces. This is a crime, day and night, against journalists and against the media outlets who are working to reveal the Israeli occupation crimes in Gaza Strip.
Al Jazeera says it will ask the International Criminal Court to investigate the killing of Samer Abu Dhaka. He was working with his colleague, Wael Dhadu, the head of Al Jazeera in Gaza, who was injured in the same drone strike. They were reporting from the school together. Wael was able to walk to a hospital dazed to receive medical attention. He already had lost his wife, son, daughter, and grandson in an earlier Israeli attack. We begin today's show with Marwan Bishara, Al Jazeera's senior political analyst, longtime Palestinian journalist and author. His books include Palestine, Israel, Peace or Apartheid, Prospects for Resolving the Conflict. He's joining us from the studios of Al Jazeera in Doha. We welcome you to Democracy Now!, Marwan. We welcome you back. If you can start off, since you're there at Al Jazeera, by talking about the International Criminal Court complaint that Al Jazeera has filed after the death of a beloved cameraman who's worked with so many Al Jazeera journalists there, was working with the head of Al Jazeera in Gaza at the time, with Wael Dhadu. Talk about what happened to him and just what it's like to walk the halls of Al Jazeera right now. As I watched Al Jazeera over the weekend, every hour, the tributes to him, the video, the photos of him, his colleagues remembering him, his family crying out for him.
Well, as you know, this is not the first time we go through this. We've gone through it a number of times already, mourning our colleagues, the death of our colleagues, and the death of their families. They are our family, and their families are also our extended family. And that's just been going on for too long. We've covered too many wars. I personally been in since the first Gaza war back in 2008, 2009. We've gone through four wars like that. And only a couple of years ago, one of our colleagues, as you know, Shireen Abaki, was killed in the Jenin refugee camp. So this is all too close to home. I mean, you know, every day we live the tragedy of the death of several hundreds in Gaza the past 10 weeks. But when it comes to our very own, I guess it's human nature, right? It's you just can't ignore it, can't go on without being preoccupied with it and preoccupied with the feelings of those loved ones that continue to endure the bombings, the inhumane bombings that we've seen in Gaza and the rest of Palestine. So it's a somber atmosphere, but people here just, I guess, plow ahead. There's no other option as countless people die and countless families suffer without shelter, without medical treatment, even without food. It's just the tragedy that we just have to live through every day and report on.
Let's talk about that issue of food. You have this new Human Rights Watch report that's out that's accusing Israel of using starvation as a weapon of war, saying Israeli forces are deliberately blocking the delivery of water, food and fuel while willfully impeding humanitarian assistance, apparently raising agricultural areas, depriving the civilian population of objects indispensable to their survival. This is Carl Scow, the deputy executive director of the UN World Food Program, speaking to reporters last week in New York after a recent visit to Gaza.
What we found there was that half of the population are starving. The grim reality is also that 9 out of 10 people are not eating enough, are not eating every day, and don't know where the next meal is going to come from. We are ready to deliver to another million people within a couple of weeks, should the conditions allow. And let me reiterate that caveat, that should those conditions allow, which would be opening of more crossings and a humanitarian ceasefire to be able to reach people across the strip.
Director of Deputy Executive Director of the UN World Food Program says 9 out of 10 people are not eating enough in Gaza. I mean, in the past, with all of Gaza's problems, hunger was not one of them. Can you talk about the significance of this and also this latest news? I mean, even as we're broadcasting these attacks on one hospital after another, I mean, Abu Dhaka and Wael Dadu were covering the strike on the UN school in Khan Yunis when Abu Dhaka was killed.
Yes, absolutely. Just as a reminder to your viewers, there was also a report by Oxfam on October 23rd. That's also just 2 weeks after the war started in Gaza, or on Gaza, where it also spoke about the weaponization of hunger. Because this has actually been going on since day one, since October 8, when defense minister, so-called defense minister, Minister of War, Yoav Gallant, if you remember, made his infamous threat by saying, we're going to cut their food, their fuel, their electricity, basically denying the Palestinians of every basic need. It's part of the collective punishment that Israel decided from day one to impose on the Palestinian, which, of course, is a war crime. But that's been the nature of the war, because right after he said that he's going to deny the Palestinians in Gaza all of these, he said they are human animals. This was basically an intent for genocide. Because right after he did make those infamous declarations, the president of Israel, Mr. Herzog, also came out with his statements about the fact, to his view, there are no innocents in Gaza. No innocents in Gaza. And that was followed by the prime minister, Netanyahu, who said something about an analogy with some biblical times, comparing the Palestinian to the Amalek, and hence basically saying that Israel will go after their families, their parents, the children, even the infants and their families. So we have the three leading Israeli officials basically admitting in public once and again active punishment against Palestinians in general in Gaza.
So, Marwan, if you can talk about what's happening, the increasing isolation of Israel and the United States supporting Israel. You have yet another vote today in the UN Security Council around a ceasefire. You have the British and German foreign ministers calling for a ceasefire, further isolating the U.S., which blocked a ceasefire at the UN Security Council. Lloyd Austin is in Tel Aviv meeting with the Israeli leadership. If you can shed light on, you know, Netanyahu, after the killing of the three Israeli hostages, held a news conference. He is under enormous pressure right now to put the hostages at the top. You've got negotiations going on, apparently, in Norway between the Qatari and Mossad officials. And now William Burns, head of Central Intelligence, is in Poland to meet with the Qatari officials. Talk about all that's happening right now. Netanyahu not wanting to end this war right now. And there is a question about, since he's facing one criminal trial after another himself, whether once this ends and there's a real evaluation done, he could end up in jail himself. So putting that off.
Well, okay, so let's try quickly to dissect all of this very complicated issue. Let me just start by a quick, I'm not going to call it correction, but shed a light on the German-British position. They have not called for an immediate ceasefire. they called for a sustained ceasefire, which is the opposite of an immediate ceasefire, because basically they said it's not anything that we think of that will happen anytime in the near future. When they mention sustained, which means the circumstances have to be suitable, which basically is very close to the American position. Unfortunately, the European clients of the United States, for the time being, remain so clients of the United States, following on the footsteps of the United States, basically to the displeasure of the majority of their public opinion, also like that of the public opinion of the United States, apparently. But clearly, the Biden administration wants to beautify the genocide in Gaza. I think they're being embarrassed because the reports coming out of Gaza, the images, the suffering, and all of that is reaching American public and the Western public.